Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Irina Lagunina, Director of Special Projects at RFERL's Russian Service. Irina, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting, Steve.
All right. Two related topics this week. One is Alexei Navalny and his illness, his poisoning, and what he on Saturday, I believe, called a long but clear path to recovery. Now, 1 month after what German authorities and labs in two other countries say was poisoning with a military-grade nerve agent from the Novichok group developed in the Soviet Union, Navalny is able to walk and talk. He thanked doctors in Germany, where he was flown a few days after falling ill on a flight from Tomsk to Moscow in August. He thanked the doctors for getting him this far. Navalny has also apparently said that he plans to return to Russia. Not clear when, I think, but it certainly makes sense. In fact, seems kind of inevitable that he would want to do so if he achieves a more or less full recovery in order to continue to seek to expose corruption in President Vladimir Putin's ruling elite and otherwise challenge Putin's grip on power. Now, I think the consensus is that the evidence that it was Novichok means it's very likely that the Russian state was involved. Irina, what do you think are the prospects for, I mean, it's obviously hard to know right now, but what do you think are the prospects for Navalny returning to Russia and continuing his opposition activities in the face of what is obviously a considerable risk?
Well, Steve, let me start with the Novichok problem, because we actually got, on Saturday, we got a letter from, an email from the one of the scientists who worked on Novichok. His name is Vladimir Uglev. And he, according to what he saw, and according to the latest information about how the situation unfolded on the day when Navalny felt sick, he claims that Navalny actually, it's definitely, first of all, it's definitely Novichok. It's definitely this particular poison from Novichok group. Most probably was on some sanitary objects in his hotel room, like maybe the toothpaste or aftershave lotion, something like this.
I see.
And from this, it got to his hands, and then on the bottle that also was presented for the bottle of water that was presented for the tests. So from what from the symptoms that Navalny is showing right now, Uglev claims that Navalny most probably got the same amount of poison as Julia Skripal in Salisbury. So his recovery will most likely be on the same pace as Julia's recovery. He claims all this because not only he himself worked on this substance and created it, but also he got poisoned himself. He got a small dose and recovered after Novichok. That's how Navalny is most probably will be recovering to reach the full recovery as Julia Skripal actually reached. So that's the first point here. The second point is...
Sorry to interrupt. And I don't really remember. How long did Julia Skripal's recovery take? It was a few months, several months, I guess.
It was over 2 months, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
So her father actually took much longer to recover than her. But taking into consideration that Navalny is also in a pretty good health condition and is a pretty strong guy, so probably that will add to the recovery process, as Julia Skripal was, of course, much younger. So the second point is whether it's really very dangerous for Navalny to return to Russia. Yes, of course. And that was, of course, not the first attack on Navalny. He always took this risk, being the leading opposition figure in Russia on one hand, and conducting those anti-corruption investigations that involved Putin's circle and people who are most close to Russian president. So he always had this risk in his life. And it was not the first attack on him. If you remember, several years ago, he was somebody threw this green substance in his face, and that affected his eye and damaged his eye. So he had to recover after this. And of course, it's extremely dangerous. And I guess that's the risk that he is taking, because it looks like right now, and this is also something that Uglev is saying, that the fact that Novichok weapon-grade substance was used against Navalny shows that it comes from the highest circles in Russia, and most probably from Putin himself. So right now it looked like it was used as a, almost unbelievable threat against Navalny, because if Kremlin wanted to kill him, Navalny would have been dead. So many opposition leaders and investigative journalists were killed. Boris Nemtsov, let me remind that Boris Nemtsov was killed in the vicinity of Kremlin, I mean, next to the Kremlin wall, which was straight in the face of all the Russian opposition figures. This is what can be done in Russia if you are against power, against those who sit in Kremlin. So, yeah, this is actually a very dangerous situation for Navalny, but I think he's willing to take this risk and to say that he will remain in politics no matter what.
Yeah, and as I think people have pointed out that other opposition or Kremlin critics have also been poisoned. There was Anna Politkovskaya was apparently poisoned before she was then shot to death. But this seems to be the first case in which an opposition figure is being poisoned by Novichok. In the past, as you mentioned, the Skripal case, those are Sergei Skripal, former intelligence agent and a double agent. So that was the kind of thing where if it was the Kremlin, as authorities around the world say, they were going after people seen as traitors, that sort of thing. Former members of security apparatus. Same with Litvinenko, who was poisoned with polonium. But this is obviously a new thing. I still have questions about, was one of the goals to get him out of Russia, even though the authorities kind of, at least on the surface, opposed that at first. But now one thing I think has been said about his potential return is that I think I read today that officials are saying they would want him to, or blood samples to be submitted to some group of investigators that includes Russia, Belarus, and possibly South Ossetia. So I guess there may be sort of conditions, either informal or formal, put on his return. But, I guess it's still down the road, and we'll see what happens with that.
Well, according to the law, they cannot do anything against his return because he's a Russian citizen, and you know, it's unbelievable that that a person who doesn't have any other citizenship would be denied access to Russia.
That's yes, absolutely. So there's really little prospect for, you know, for Russia to say, oh, you can't come back, and that would obviously create a huge uproar if it did try to do so. Okay,
but Steve, one point here is that they are talking about different sorts of investigations. Before that, they were suggesting Germany to make a joint investigation.
Right.
Before that, they refused to start the investigation because there was no case to investigate. So it's the same tactic that they use with, for example, Malaysian Boeing that was shot over Donbass in 2014. The more serious, the more noise about the investigation, the less people understand what is going on.
Right.
And the less people actually believe in any of the theories. That's very general tactic of Russian authorities in the last decade, I would say.
Yes, absolutely. To create, in some cases, you know, demands that are kind of impossible to be fulfilled, and then say, "Oh, you didn't fulfill our demands." Absolutely, that's a good point. And thanks for going through the Uglev's description of how he apparently was poisoned. I had heard about the water bottle, but it's interesting to know that he thinks it was that the Novichok was on some kind of, you know, on the toothpaste or aftershave or something, and then got on the water bottle when Navalny touched it. So that's interesting. All right. Let's move on to the other topic, which is related. It's elections, the regional and local elections that took place in various parts of Russia earlier this month, September 11th to 13th, and the elections to the State Duma, the lower house of parliament, that are to be held next year. And Navalny scored some small victories in the local elections, notably in votes for city councils in Novosibirsk and Tomsk, the Siberian city where he'd been working with supporters ahead of those elections when he was apparently poisoned. But the Kremlin-controlled United Russia Party won most of the elections, governor's elections in several regions, amid allegations of substantial fraud in United Russia's favor. Now, Irina, what kind of a signal, if any, do you think these elections sent in terms of the Duma elections next year? And another question, the Duma elections are or had been expected to be held in September 2021, a year from now. But it looks like the Kremlin is now openly considering moving them forward by several months. What is going on there, and why would this be, I guess, in Putin's interest?
Let me start with the second question, because it's not only Kremlin that is suggesting that the elections should be moved, maybe even on spring months. This goes on for quite a long time right now, because according to the law, the United Day of Vote in Russia is the second Sunday of September. But even the Central Electoral Commission stated several times already that it's a very poorly chosen day, actually, because a lot of people, first of all, those who have kids are still busy with the schools, because the school school year starts in Russia on the 1st of September. So for parents, it's pretty busy first 2 weeks of September. And those who do not have kids actually prefer to take vacations in September. So it's not really a good day for a vote in terms of people's participation in the vote, if we consider it fair and, you know, without fraud. Mm-hmm. So right now, it's not only Kremlin who is saying that that elections should be moved on some other months. But it's also the opposition, and they will meet with the opposition parties, like, if you can say that it's an opposition, of course, but allowed opposition, like Just Party or communists. They are saying that most probably they will discuss it with Putin in early October. They will have a meeting there. They offer also to switch elections to another month. But what is more important is not even the time when the elections are going to take place, but the time frame of the elections. Because right now, because of the COVID epidemic in Russia, instead of one day of the vote, 3 days were allowed in order for people not to gather in huge numbers at the electoral points. This practice showed to be so comfortable for manipulation of the results that now they want to make it a rule that you have 3 days of votes rather than one. And right. This is something that even the what they call the system opposition in Russia, they understand that this actually gives a lot of more possibilities for manipulations, and the opposition parties are planning to put a stop on this 3 days of vote.
Oh, okay.
As for Kremlin, yeah, it probably would the move of the election, the switch to later time, will probably bring the Duma elections closer to the presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
So with the present situation and with the present control of the electoral process, Duma will most probably be once again 99% pro-Putin, so he would have more control of the process. But this is really too far-stretched, I think.
Right. You're talking about 2024 when he now has the option of running again for president for what would be a fifth term. You pointed out that this new three-day rule, which was obviously used in these September elections, and I think that's been one of the excuses that the Electoral Commission is giving for moving the election, saying, well, in September, you know, as you mentioned, the school has just started, and having them over 3 days instead of just one day, which was always Sunday in the past, you know, means having on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then you have to set up. A lot of the polling places are in schools, so I think they're using that as a pretext. You know, oh, we need to, you know, we don't want to get in the way of the kids learning. So they're using that as a pretext, or one of the pretexts for, you know, for potentially moving the timing of the elections. But it will be interesting to see whether the opposition, including systemic opposition, can you know, fight back against holding the elections over 3 days. All right, we're running out of time. We're going to have to wrap it up for today. Irina, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, I'll be back next Monday with another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for my Week in Russia newsletter. Thanks for listening.